The button has been pressed.
Oh shit.
So normally, if we are on a break, we'll come back and we'll discuss why we were on a break. Last week was really busy and shit. Normally we'll start with, like, you know, what we're geeking on and all that kind of stuff. But I think today needs to be a special episode.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very special episode of the fucking DuoCast.
Very special episode. So, long story short, Brandon and I have decided to retire from Super Art Fight. And Saturday and Friday were our last two Super Art Fight shows ever.
Yeah.
And typically, you know, when something like this happens, there's always like, well, why? And I don't necessarily want to do an entire podcast about why, because I don't think it really matters that much. And if you're curious as to why, you know, wherever you're seeing this, you can reach out to us individually and we can get into the weeds of it. But I mean, if Brandon, if you can break down your reasons for retiring in like an elevator pitch scenario kind of thing, like, you know, just highlights, couple sentences, nothing too deep or depressing, but just like the high level 100-yard stare version of why you decided it's time to move on.
The quick version is a very sad short story. I'm at my day job the better part of 11 and a half hours a day, maybe 12 hours a day, depending on the season. So my daily tasks are out of hand, and you know, it was one of those things where I wanted to start getting serious about photography, and I wanted to start getting serious about my health and start kind of righting the ship on some of the things that I had been neglecting. And I had been using Art Fight as a way to kind of maintain the status quo and distract me from a lot of the personal things that I needed to handle. Mm. And I took a look at everything and I said, something has to come off of my plate. And the thing that I decided to come off of my plate fucking breaks my heart, because to be 100% transparent with you, and I haven't said it to really anybody, about a year ago I made a 5-year plan and I told myself that number one with a bullet was make Art Fight better or quit. And I don't know what better is for me. So in turn, it was time, and I think I couldn't feel like I made it better because I couldn't give it everything it needed, and at the same time, I felt like I was giving it way more than I was able to give. And it's probably the most honest I've been about it, really, anywhere. And I worry about what the response will be from some of the people that I care most about in Art Fight, especially. Yeah. But
yeah,
I want to go on the record saying I hold absolutely no ill will. I love Art Fight. I love everyone in Art Fight. I am more than proud of the 8 years plus that I have spent side by side with everyone, traveling and arguing and figuring out everything and holding everyone up and being a support and being called Art Dad is one of the kindest throwaway nicknames that I think I've picked up from maybe anybody. And having that sort of love is something that I can't really describe, because we would bring in these idol kids and I would basically suddenly be like, okay, so welcome to this dysfunctional as fuck family. If you're interested in hanging on, here we go. Yeah. I'm going to be as big of a cheerleader as I can. I'm going to scare the fuck out of you. I'm going to give you a lot of really tough love. You're probably going to scream fuck you at me a couple times at least. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I hope you're going to know that I care, and that's why I'm on your ass.
So, like, if Art Fight was an Overwatch team, you would be the healer, but, like, aggressively healing.
I think I'd be, like, a tank with a med pack is really what I'm looking at. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm going to bowl away everything, and I'm going to make sure that nobody hurts you. And at the same time, I'm only going to give you a little bit of encouragement from time to time, but I hope that matters.
Yeah.
Because I hope you know I'm doing everything I can to try and lift you up.
Like Orisa so, with a giant health pack, just smashing on people.
Yeah. If I can be like Orisa with a team of Hanzos, where it's just a lot of flippy dudes. And you know, maybe some snipes here and there, or whatever it is. If I can just fucking plant that shield and just med pack some motherfuckers behind me, like that's really all I'm looking to do. With the fucking nerdiest reference.
Yeah, you got it.
But yeah, that was kind of the idea, and the whole thing really stemmed from how I joined Art Fight, because I don't know if a lot of people are aware, but the whole reason I got involved was because I was living with the guy who was the referee. Mm-hmm. And the first Idol show, he decided he didn't want to go the morning of. And I should be clear, at the time, I knew Marty because I went to high school with him, and I knew you guys from helping out at one show.
Right.
That was the sum total of my understanding of this crew, and I didn't want to leave you guys in the lurch, so I loaded everything into my super fancy 2005 Chevy Malibu.
Yeah.
And fucking just tore down to the Metro Gallery, and it was like, this is what we're doing. I don't know if you guys can trust me. I don't know if you want to trust me. I don't know if you want to give me this responsibility, but I've got a ref shirt and I'm here. So let's do the thing.
Yeah.
And that's where we kind of got started, and I wasn't about to leave you guys in the lurch, and you were kind enough to take me in, which is apparently everything I needed. Like, I needed somebody to just kind of go, yeah, no, you're good. You're one of us. You need to come do this thing. And I possessed no microphone skills, really. I possessed no artistic talent. Like, the only thing that I was really good at doing was lifting things and being on time. And I managed to parlay that into being on stage in front of thousands of people.
Yeah.
And having a chance to host and winning an Art Fight and just everything that goes along with it. So,
yeah.
8 years later. Yeah, like, 8 years later, I don't know. Like, fuck. The first trip we did we drove from Baltimore to Boston, played a show for Vitamin Water, left the Vitamin Water show, got back in the car, got back to Hartford, Connecticut at 3:30 in the morning, got up and played another show, I think at noon.
Yeah.
On like that Saturday, did Kineticon all weekend, and then drove home. And I should have been exhausted and hating everything, and I immediately like dislocated my shoulder begging you guys to take me in full time, being like, cool, let's do absolutely every fucking show we possibly can. I think we did like 36 shows that year.
Yeah, it was
like
nuts.
Something ridiculous. Out of the 52 weeks a year, we were working more than half of them and just fucking hustling, man, all day long.
I wish we got paid like we were working that way.
Oh, but well, that was the thing, is that was during the like, that was, for the lack of a better way to put it, our summer of ska. We had one hot summer where we were like, fuck yeah, world's ours, let's do this thing. And yeah, like, it was in a weird way a lot of trying to reclaim those moments, and we got smarter as a business and we got smarter as people, and we burned the candle a little less at both ends.
I
think even if it was only marginally smarter, every single show we did, we learned something. That's even true. If it was just a tolerance level of each other. Yeah. We learned something. This is the uncomfortable reality of the situation, is five of us, and not always five of us, managed this thing for 8 years, and people came and people went, and we had to figure out how to navigate all of that and figure out how to navigate friendships. And some of us lost friendships because of this. Mm-hmm. And it was weird thing to kind of double down on. And when you and I had a conversation about what was going on with me, I think in a weird way, I kind of struck home for you a little bit on some things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't expect it to be us. I expected it to be me. And I couldn't be happier for the two of us to be able to have that night together, because with the way the last like 2 or 3 years have been, I feel like you and I have been kind of like, I stand up, you're fucking behind me just flexing. Yeah. You're throwing down elbows, I'm standing behind you just full fucking arms folded. Like,
yeah.
I feel like a weird, like, backing each other up thing for the last few years. And it was a real honor to have that moment be like, no. Me and my boy, we're rolling. This is what's gonna happen.
Yeah, I've told a couple of people this, but I haven't told everybody. But like, I don't remember when, but it was years ago, and it was an offhand comment, and I don't know, we were grousing about something, but I told you then, like, if you say it's go time, it's go time.
Like, yeah.
If you quit, I'm out. So
I remember that, and it terrified the fuck out of me, to be honest with you, because I. Are we going to – wait, hang on. Are we stopping short of some things or only just so that we don't upset actual people?
Well, no. I mean, I just wanted to get like a quick overview of the why to get that out of the way. Like, we don't have to get into specifics, but
– no, that makes sense. But to give people an idea, I never forgot that comment, and it's what worried me about making the decision for myself, because I was worried you were going to follow through with that, because that's kind of how you roll. And I worried about what would happen and how everybody would handle it. And it was one of those things where, you know, there are people that I care about that I didn't want to have to be like, well, what the fuck do we do now?
Sure. Well, the thing is, like, we're not going away, like, we're not cutting off all contact and stuff.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
I think it's more of the, when the show actually happens next time, the question is, how is everyone else going to feel about that entire process?
Yeah,
there's some things that happen with you and I that we handle, that, like, this last show, that Friday at Autobar, I spent more time trying to teach everyone than I did trying to manage everything. Usually it's, okay, I've got a hit list of things that I need to handle, and I've got things packed in the back of my head, and I need to make sure I'm doing this. And then I need to make sure if there's a bit with you or with Storm Sketch or with the Baron or with anyone else, that I'm playing support up there and I understand everything so that I hit the marks. Because if Baron's up there and he has that bit that he had with the book or whatever it is, and I fucked that up, I ruined his bit. Now he's got to improv on it. So on my last night, I have to worry about all of the other things. And then that moment up on stage, am I at my mark? Where am I at? Did we have the conversation? Where is this going? Did I let the thing out slow enough? Did I let it droop too much? Like, the anxiety is real. And I want to say that because a lot of people, I think, in a weird way, are under the impression that you and I are kind of nerve proof.
Yeah.
And it's more, I think, we just kind of plow through it because we don't want to fuck up. Yeah,
I am definitely nerve proof when it comes to the show, because it's always, everyone's on. Like, when we hit the stage, even if the bits don't work, even if everything falls apart, even if the mics blow up, even if, like, the screens don't turn on, that part I never worry about.
You just listed everything I'm fucking terrified of, and I think I might understand why you never worry about it, because you're like, fucking Brandon's here, we're fine.
Well, I mean, even if it falls apart, it doesn't matter, because
that's true.
The audience doesn't know. Like, I used to play orchestra, like, in paid orchestras in high school, and you know, community orchestras and county orchestras and stuff. And the one thing you learn when you're performing is that you just keep going. You flub up, you don't go back and repeat it. You just, like, if you hit a sour note, you don't care. You move on. And I think when it's showtime, everybody's in the mode of, like, we're doing this for the people, you know, we're up there trying to do our best. The bits never go the way they're supposed to go. Like, a plan is only as good as the paper it's written on, and we don't even write shit down on paper. So, like,
no.
Yeah.
That is probably the best definition of the best way to plan an art fight.
Yeah.
So the whole bit when I proposed.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't have anything written down. And hearing the women in the locker room, who are absolutely kind and sweet and caring, thinking I'm a goddamn maniac because I'm like, I got a ring, we'll figure it out, it'll be good. It's like, you can't just wing a proposal. It's like, the fuck, I can't. We're fine. Don't worry about it. And, like, insisting on planning everything, I was like, the more y'all plan it, the more I'm going to fuck this up.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Just letting you know. Yeah. Like, yeah. You got to give me a direction. Just be like, hey, Brandon, be on the left-hand side of the stage and get ready to hit a high five when it happens. No description of what it is. Just know that I'm going to know. I'm looking for that hand up in the air. I'm going to watch the elbow. I'm going to hit that high five. Like,
yeah,
whether you're Cannonball Special or what's going on, like, I'm in. I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I've never been nervous on stage.
Better man than I.
I have trust in the show. I have trust in the process. And I've been in front of people for way too long. So it's like, you know, it's going to happen. We're going to do the thing.
Yeah. I think that might be the big difference between you and I is I didn't come from a performing background.
Yeah.
An art fight was my gauntlet. Like, that was how I got going. So doing the intro the first time, I didn't know. I just fucking, hey, Brandon, you good? Yeah, I'm good. Fucking lying to all of you.
Yeah,
no,
sure.
But no hesitation, just lying to all of you. Just like, yeah, no, I got this. It's no problem. Everything's fine.
But that's exactly why this works, is because it's a low pressure thing. It's, you know, if you fail, everyone's going to be around there to fix it for you. So
I love that response from you, because I can guarantee you there are at least six art fighters I can think of that just shouted fuck you at whatever device they were watching us on.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you fail, you have to trust in the people that are up on stage with you. They're going to help you out.
I don't doubt that, but it doesn't change the end thought at the end. The thought when you're reflecting on the match or on the moment or whatever it is of like, yeah, I felt like I was really on everything. And then I had that moment, and then I was spent the entire time trying to mentally recover from that. Whether anyone else notices at all, you know, if I was up on stage and I flubbed a joke or something felt like it died, I felt like I had to fucking break out a goddamn backo and dig my shit out of there. Yeah. So like, I pulled a Ross. I needed to be twice as funny for at least 10 minutes. This is no good.
Yeah. And I guess the funny thing is that like the audience usually doesn't notice any of that stuff.
Or they're kind enough to not give you a hard time, which bless most of you.
Well, from the audience perspective, they're there to have a good time. And if they see us having a good time, I mean, that's that sweet spot. Like when everybody's jamming and jiving and stuff. And like, I feel like we hit that on Friday.
Jesus, man, did we hit that on the fucking. Okay, look, if you were in the crowd on Friday, thank you. I know I said it at the end of the show, but genuinely. Because I have the distinct ability to come out and get a barometer on the crowd. When I come out and my feet hit that stage, you all went bananas. And the call and response with you guys was a fucking 20.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that immediately, like, I don't know whether it was the pressure of the night or you just all wanted to be really part of this thing, but man, did we feel it. So when I got to the point where I got to look back to the side, and like Ross was kind enough to actually videotape the thing, so I got a chance to replay it, and I felt like I hit everything, which is great. When I got a chance to actually call Marty and Ross up, I felt like at that point I was handing off a hot crowd.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They like, were ready. Because that's the thing, is I also felt like over the years it was my job to get them going. If they were at a like, this is going to be fun, it's like, fuck, I ruined all of this for both of you, and I'm terrible. Sorry, they're awful.
Well, yeah. End of an era. End of an era.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of any of that whole stuff. Like, yeah. Did you end up having some weird conversations with people at the end where it was like, no?
No. I mean, everybody was kind of, I don't know. Everybody was just happy to see us there or see me there, and just like, we're going to hang out afterwards and we're going to do stuff after and stuff.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause you know, I feel like we've made a lot of friends throughout the show. Like we've gone to places, like, you know, some of the faraway people that we never would have met before, like the whole
LA crew.
The LA crew,
the huge shout out to the LA crew. And what I'm talking about LA crew is when we did the art fight at Anime Expo in LA. We did Unleashed first.
Yeah.
We went into a room. There was a group of people sitting in like a semicircle together. And I begged them, like I prompted them on how this works. And I begged them, I need you guys to be my cheering section. And they delivered. And then they came back the next year and delivered and were Facebook friends. And that's rad. Like that sort of thing shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't want to hang out with me after two interactions. I'm not that cool.
Yeah. The opinions may vary, crew. From like the Boston area, like Vicky and Allie and Alex and all of them. Mm-hmm. Keith at Northeast Wrestling's very own Keith Youngblood. Yes. I mean, we've met so many people and done so many great things. What I wanted to get for this episode was like your top five art fight moments, my top art fight. Top five art fight moments and just go down memory lane and like,
oh God.
And hit the highlights.
I wish you would have told me I could have written something down.
No. It's gotta be off the dome. And it doesn't have, it doesn't have to be in any specific order.
Okay. Like, thank you. I appreciate that. Cause that would make me a little concerned that I'd be like, so I have to pick a definitive number one.
Well, and if Kelly, if Kelly doesn't hear your proposal as number one, she will rip your balls off.
That's fine. I was going to start that at number five and get that fucker out of the way. That's what's going on right now.
Yeah, like your top five moments. Maybe they'll overlap with us, but like I figure that the best way to send us off is to just tell everybody why we love the show. Tell everybody our highlights and our top five, because between the two of us, that's a top 10. I think it's a great 10 list.
Yeah. No, I hope it's a great 10. Okay. So because you're prompting me, you have to go first.
Fuck. Okay. I didn't even think of this.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Because I can do number five. Okay.
Yeah, so, you should go first.
Number five. No, only because Jamie prompted it, so it's an easy one to do off the top of my head. I proposed to my wife in an art fight, and it was fucking rad. Like, and I had no prep whatsoever for the whole thing. So I'm in the back. I had told everyone but her, mind you, to give an idea and context, she had been telling me for years that she had this birthday where every year they go on the family goes on vacation on and around her birthday. So one day during the vacation, they celebrate her birthday. They planned a surprise party. It's years before she and I were even dating. They plan a big surprise party for her. They tell her to come upstairs to go find out what's going on. She goes upstairs. Everybody's got cameras. It's a big surprise party. She hadn't done her makeup, hadn't done her hair, was wearing like a half dirty Golden Girls shirt. And they took all of the photos and she never let any of them live it down. So I know there's going to be a moment where she is going to need photos and people are going to be paying attention to her, because I made the decision that after she had come up and seen P-Lander Z and P-Lander brought her up and played Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and her and P-Lander Pink are singing a duet together, she wouldn't shut up about it. Like, she caught the performing bug, which was rad. So I'm like, cool, this is what we're going to do. I'm gonna bring you up on stage. I'm going to propose to you. I haven't figured out how, but this was during the summer show. I forget what the name of it was. But essentially, it was a big summer theme. So like, we all wore like Hawaiian shirts and the whole nine.
Yeah, yeah.
So leading up to this, we're getting ready at the apartment. She walks out. She's like not bothered to put anything really on. She's like rocking like tank top, jeans, and flip-flops. Her hair's all over the place in a bun. I'm like, you need to go get yourself ready. She's like, why? It's just art fight. And I said, because you're an adult, go get yourself ready.
It's never just art fight.
She got fucking angry with me, slammed the bathroom door, told me that she wasn't coming. I told her, finish getting ready and get in the fucking car. So we're arguing leading up to when I'm going, because I'm trying to do her a favor by going,
yeah,
know what's about to happen right now.
You're gonna want to look the part.
I'm trying to fucking help. Stop fighting me about this shit. Sure enough, she gets all the photos and videos taken of her and everything else like that. But yeah, the other favorite part about that, I had no plan, and seeing Aaron Surak and Jamie Baldwin go ballistic because I had no plan, and then haphazardly hobble a plan together for me, was kind of one of my favorite things. Of like, they took pity on me, and I don't think they realized that I was genuinely okay with winging it.
Uh-huh.
everyone else around me was very much not okay with me winging
it. You need a plan. You need a plan.
Do you understand how important this is? Yeah, I don't care. It's fine. Yeah. Everything's going to be good.
And Surak getting pissed at you and like whipping you into shape is the funniest image in my head.
So like, yeah, literally, I think it was almost like in unison. They both were like, "The fuck you mean you don't have a plan?" I'm like, "What?" I like, it's not my cocky shithead. I'm like, "She's gonna say yes, so yeah, what's yeah, it yeah. matter? You can't be that way."
Like, that's great.
Yeah. So anyway, number five for you. Where are you at?
So one of the things that I will always hold dear in my heart is we've done a number of shows with PLander Z, absolutely yes. My favorite band in the whole fucking universe. We used to have two bands perform, and one time I told everybody, I was like, "Hey, me and Johnny gonna put something together, so we'll be the interim band, so we yes. don't have to pay for anybody." And everyone was like, "Okay, fine, whatever." So me, Johnny, and Brad convinced Johnny's wife at the time, AZ, my wife, Audrey, and Aaron Surak to join us on stage and create this makeshift band in the space of a month. Like we rehearsed,
rad.
We rehearsed,
super rad.
We rehearsed maybe like five times before we hit stage, and it was great. It was like, it was a magical moment. Like we played two sets or one set? I forget. I think it was like one set.
I think it was one big set. If I'm not no. It was one big set. I think in the middle, because I think that's when we started to shift to only having one band at the time.
Yeah,
and we close with a band because Paul and Storm fucking chased everyone out. I don't mind putting them on blast at this point. It doesn't bother me. And for as much as I love Anna Monoguchi, they did the same exact thing.
Yeah,
which is a fucking shame.
Yeah. So we got the mid card slot, and me and Johnny and Brad and Aaron and Audrey and AZ had a fucking blast. And it was like, you know, for some reason, anytime me and Johnny put a band together, we rehearse like two or three times and then hit the stage, and it's fine, you know, because we're not like Steve Vai virtuoso bullshitty shit stuff
right.
like that.
Right.
So the best part of that show was like we got to open for PLander Z, and PLander Z did the headline part. Like after our last match, PLander Z went up and they brought me and Johnny up on stage. So we both got to play with my favorite band in the entire fucking universe at an art fight show. And that's always been one of my favorite moments. And actually, one of our friends from karate, because Johnny and Brad, that's how we know each other from karate class. Some of our friends came, and one of them recorded our set the entire night, and it's up on Facebook in this shitty little iPhone video thing. So it's nice. Saved for posterity, so everyone can check it out on Facebook. But that was one of my favorite moments. I've always wanted to play on stage, play music on stage, so I got that opportunity. And then, of course, you know, art fight, it's, you know, our thing. But
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I will always remember that.
that was a hell of a lot of fun to see you up there too, wearing a different hat, because I had already had the man crush, but man, did you fucking solidify it up there?
it's the wah pedal. What does it?
it's the nuts. Well, I think it was that, and I think you wore like a shiny orange dress shirt,
yeah,
which is not a normal crew thing for you to be, and you went like. Full on like, no, I'm taking this motherfucker seriously. Yeah. We're going old school with this sort of thing.
Oh yeah.
So I think the level of effort you put in, definitely, like, I'm up in the balcony watching this. Like, it's also one of the only times I ever left the backstage area and went up to the balcony to get a better vantage point of the band, because I wanted to take it in, because I'm like, fucking Jamie's Murray, that makes me so proud. I love him. Hey, he's the best.
It was a lot of fun.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, number four, Brandon.
Kineticon, where we ended up doing a fundraiser for Emily, who was our former social media manager. She was doing a run in Disney for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, if memory serves. And we decided to do this gimmick called Dares for Dollars, where we were doing an art fight show. And I think it was Unleashed, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It was an Unleashed, yeah.
It was Unleashed show. And the idea was that you threw up money, cash money in hand, and you came up with a dare. And if we agreed to it, you donated it. And it, we would set a price point that, like, at one point, somebody said how much to draw a dick on Ross's head. Luckily, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Dee, who is our Mistress of Darkness, came up with the idea of the eyeliner pencil, which was genius.
Mistress Doom Kitty.
Yes. Thank you. Confusing her and Colleen's gimmick. I apologize.
Yeah.
But having her immediately be like, no, use this. And it looked like a permanent marker, but then wiped completely clean, which was great. But there was a moment where there were two guys in the audience. They were wearing like lucha masks, and they said, hey, $20 from each of us if we get to chop you guys in the chest. So for anyone who is playing along or doesn't understand, a chop is a wrestling move where you essentially take your open hand and you come down on somebody's chest. So it's very much, and it's loud as hell depending on the size of the hand, how much impact. But the idea is it's not meant necessarily to do anything more than sting and make a really loud noise that makes everybody go, ugh. So these two guys are like, yeah, we'll do this. And I immediately set a new price point, and I was like, $100. And Marty and Ross both volunteered if we upped it to $150. So suddenly everyone around the room is just holding up their hands, and I'm running around the room with a bucket in hand, just collecting cash, trying to get to 150.
Yeah.
A guy, as I'm kind of scooting by, goes, hang on, and grabs my arm and says, I don't know who the fuck those two guys are, but I'm part of the largest wrestling organization in the area. If you want to get chopped, I'll do it. And I looked at him, pulled $20 out of my own pocket, stuffed it in the bucket, and said, get on stage. And that guy was going to be my ringer for a good show. Because either he was going to suck and I was going to fucking berate him in front of everybody, or it was going to be brilliant.
Yes.
So we get up on stage, and show was fun. But like at that point, once we started doing the Dares for Dollars, it became Stupid Human Tricks. We completely lost all control of Art Fight being Art Fight.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So we go and we get up on stage, and Marty's up there, and I think we all took our shirts off, if I remember correctly, to do it correctly. And Marty gets his chop from the first two guys, and it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Ross gets his chop from the other guys, not too bad. Keith Youngblood of Northeast Wrestling, and you can feel free to follow him. I think he's on Instagram as AR Youngblood.
I think so.
If you just search Youngblood, you'll find him. He's a tall drink of water. He loves wearing Topanga shirts. He's my kind of people. So Keith is, if memory serves, and mind you, I had a very skewed perspective. If he was, I believe he's maybe 6'5". Mm-hmm. He might be a little shorter than that, but he is head and shoulders taller than I am.
Yeah, to me, he looks like he's 8'10", whatever. Right,
and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm trying to be reasonable with my estimations.
Yeah.
And he was a bit thinner than he is now. He's definitely put on a fair bit of muscle. Now, like, dangerous as shit. I wouldn't let him chop me.
Yeah, you'd be dead.
Yeah. So he in all of his wrestling ability, crowds buzzing because Marty and Ross just got chopped. The other two guys, by the way, they chopped me too, but I completely blew both of them off. Marty is on the ground because Marty knows how to sell a wrestling chop. So the second guy chopped him and Marty dropped to the ground, kind of like doing a full on like Sanford and Son calling for his wife. So he's worried about everything. He's trying to sell everything, but he knew he wasn't going to get chopped by Keith.
Yeah.
Keith literally looks at the audience, silences everybody down, gets everybody to get real quiet. Keith puts his hand on my shoulder, right? I'm sorry, was it I think it was, he put his hand on this shoulder, he reared up, and I looked up, and I swear to God, his hand was 10 feet in the air. And he comes down with just the loudest, most thunderous thing. I didn't even realize I got hit until after, I'd say there was a 2 Mississippi, and then all of a sudden I felt my whole chest go crunch, swirl. I went, oh God. Hearing the entire audience go bananas.
It was so good.
It was deafeningly silent, and the crowd went nuts afterward. So I don't know how much you'll be able to see it, but literally right after I took a photo, I don't know how much we can see
yeah,
here.
Yeah, that looks like a Urukai death paw.
Right. So then there was the death paw. Then the next day I took one, and there's a welt on my – I don't know if you can see the welt on my
– Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the next day he had left welts and individual – I could count the fingerprints. Like, there's a thumbprint. Who throws a hand so hard they leave a thumbprint? Like – and –
Oh, so I good.
Didn't have to sell it like Marty did, because he fucking halved me. Like, dude went full Jimi Hendrix and chopped me down with the edge of his hand.
Yeah.
He stands me back up, looks at me, goes, "You okay?" And I went, "That was awesome." He immediately then starts following me on social media. We hit it off, and he is the coolest fucking guy.
Yeah, he's so awesome.
Because I got a chance to, for charity, get cracked in the chest by someone, by the way, who is a current Northeast Wrestling Tag Team Champion with Jerry the King fucking Lawler, Hall of Famer. I get to say that I am friends with a legitimate top tier pro wrestler.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is the coolest thing.
Yeah.
Like, I am so stoked to be able to, like, vanity tell people who absolutely won't care when I see him on NXT in a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
They're
yeah.
like, "That dude shot me in the chest at an anime convention." They'd be like, "I don't fucking care." Yeah, they'd be like, "It matters to me." It matters to me. I'm gonna Instagram it, and he's gonna be like, "Yeah, hey, what's up?" They'll talk to me. And I'm going to feel like everything was worth it, because I got big time by Youngblood, and that was rad.
That was amazing. Like, that slap, just it echoed off of the walls. It just
it was. Yeah. Yeah. It's so much so where people were coming up to me the next day from, like, as I was standing behind the table asking me if I was OK. Yeah. And then I would show them the welt, and every response was, "Oh my God," because I think for almost a half second, they really thought it was fake, at least in that sense of it. And like, a lot of pro wrestling absolutely is scripted, and it still takes a ton of athleticism, but a chop's a chop.
A chop is a chop, man.
And there is no way around that. And I was not built for a chop.
No.
No.
Like, no.
I am a muddy side of beef, but ready for a chop I am not.
And that was like pre-leveled up Keith. Can you imagine catching those hands at now new and improved leveled up Keith?
I would want to at least know with a month's notice so I could spend all of my days doing chest day. Just nothing but fucking chest day. I'd come rolling in like Gaston. Just swole all day long. Just tearing shirts and just hamburger meat all hanging out. Just like, "Come and get some, beast." Hello.
Midi's is saying hi.
No, Trinket.
Oh, Trinket is saying hi. Bye, Trinky. Man.
But yeah, so that's number four for me.
That's a great number four.
Fucking love Keith. He is the best, and continues to invite us out to things and is stoked to see us and still chit chats with us and lets me give him shit about his workouts and just what a rad dude. Like, has no business being that kind to me. And such a fucking rad dude.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. I'm so excited when I like see highlight reels of him like beating the shit out of people and just flying around the ring and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, starstruck. Still to this day, like, swoon.
Yeah.
Arrested, paid attention to me. This is the best. Yeah, I know. I'm dumb and I don't care. I absolutely loved it. I hold that guy in the highest regard.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, What's your number four, Jane?
Number four is also Kineticon related. Stupid. Our cat keeps eating anything that's not tied down that's plastic. So there's just random carcasses of wrappers all over the place.
Nice.
So I have like a couple of small bundles in one. Like there was the time where Deanna Troi, Marina Sirtis of Star Trek The Next Generation fame had a panel before us, and we were loading in, and she stops her panel. She's on the main stage. She squints, looks at our banner and says, "What the hell is a super art fight?"
Yeah.
It's fucking Deanna Troi talking shit about our show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gargoyle's fame Damona is like, "What the hell is a super art fight?" And I'm like, everything's better now. It's us. Everything's better now.
It's us. And then there was the time where we did our first gauntlet match, where we it was a Royal Rumble, where every 5 minutes we had more people on, and at the time I was basically the Super Art Fight Brooklyn Brawler. So if you're unfamiliar with the term of a jobber in wrestling, it's basically someone you trundle out when you need to put an opponent over, when you need to put the new guy over, you have a jobber come out.
And this is fucking bullshit. He's the godfather and always has been. He was just hanging out, having a good time, and has never cared about his record, and was happy to give absolutely anyone a chance to swing at the king an opportunity.
So we 1 year decided that we were going to do a Royal Rumble situation, and I was I'll go in first. I don't care. I'll get knocked out.
15 people or something like that.
Yeah, it was something crazy. It was ridiculous. I was like, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
Put me in. I'll get kicked out like 2 minutes. I'll start it off right. I'll get the crowd hyped. All that kind of stuff.
And admittedly, like, I thought you would make it past like the third or fourth elimination, because you're an elder statesman in art fight, you're a known quantity. Yeah. Like, I thought, okay, cool, this makes sense. He's going to put on a good showing. Anyone who is not as seasoned as he is will help bolster them up.
Yeah, I can put anyone over. It, yeah.
Right. And that would be the idea, is like, you would be enhancement talent, where if someone else who was less known, say our fighting fanboy Mike Donahue's or something like that, who are incredible art fighters in their own right, but don't have the crowd recognition that you do, could immediately, like, you would immediately pony up next to them to then basically almost physically give them the rub of, yeah, like,
hey, do this.
Well, almost like if you're paying attention to them, they're someone.
Yeah.
And both you and Baron Ron Sexable both had that policy of like, no, there are a lot of people who are involved in this thing who the crowd may not know. We need to make sure that people know these are people to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Whether it looked like you were attacking them and they had a chance to stand on their own, or you were making them look better by comparison of just being next to them, that sort of shit mattered. Like, we were almost doing a bit of wrestling math at that point.
Yeah, I was there just to like put people over. About the fifth opponent that I knocked out, it started to go a different way. Like,
yeah, the crowd started to groundswell behind your boy. So next thing you know, it, like, some people started to fade off, and I knew you were going to run the thing when you eliminated Ghost Free Hood Nick DeFabio.
Yeah.
Like, when it was holding hands over the two of you, and you beat Nick, and Nick had this moment where even he looked confused because the crowd was hotter than shit for him when he hit the stage.
Yeah.
And I almost think they wanted to see an underdog win in a weird way. You were almost an underdog at that point.
Sure, definitely. Like,
they wanted that rags to riches story.
Yeah.
And he went out, and it all, like, one of my favorite things during that was seeing you up there and me looking back and seeing, I think it was Baron Sexaville, Ghost Free Hood, Jamie Baldwin, and like two others sitting on the floor in front of the stage, looking up, watching you go for this thing, fucking cheering you on at that point, where they're like, no, he's going to do the thing. Like, we almost had a Daniel Bryan moment where we're like, he's going to do the thing. Yeah. It's going to be the best. Right.
Yeah. And so I ended up going the entire way. The canvas got so full at one point, I ran to the back, grabbed a separate
board and just started drawing whatever on it and just started holding it up and running around and stuff.
And to give people an idea, regular art fight has what we call four sets of boards. So it's four panels wide. This one had six panels wide and they still ran out of space.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were just drawing straight on foam core at that point. We were a much more expensive show.
Yeah, we were. Jesus.
So that was hysterical. But my absolute favorite Kineticon memory, and this is all tied into four because Kineticon is one big lump. I lump all of Kineticon is one big blur to me. The night before our big show, Pacific Rim came out.
Yes. Fuck yes.
And we did an Unleashed show, which ran late. And because it always does. And we had a great time. Everyone was super hyped. And we all wanted to see Pacific Rim. There's a theater across the street from the convention center in Connecticut now. And this was like the first time we had seen this theater. They were doing a midnight showing of Pacific Rim. And we told everyone in the audience, hey, we're going to go see this crazy ass movie. It's got giant monsters. It's by Guillermo del Toro. It's going to be amazing.
Right.
So we walk over there with like an army of fans and we pile into the theater and I stand up and I look around and I say, hi, I'm very sorry, but I tend to get very vocal in a movie. Is that all right with all of you? I don't want to disturb you, but like, if you will allow me, I will yell at the screen. And everyone was kind of like, yeah, sure. Because it was all Kineticon people. It was all Art Fight fans.
Because they didn't understand at that moment. They thought they were just placating to you. What they didn't know is they were about to see Shakespeare the way it's meant to be performed. Because there was a performance that none of us knew was going to happen. Like, you, Andy Kaufman, all of us, every one of us. Like, we had an amazing performance, and you were like, motherfuckers, get in the bus. We're going for milk and cookies.
Yeah.
And just next thing you know, we're in the movie, and Jamie, who has never really drank like much at all. Like, you've enjoyed a cocktail from time to time, but I've never seen you drunk. I don't know if you've ever been drunk.
Yeah.
So you are stone sober and holding fucking court among everyone.
I mean, just imagine seeing Pacific Rim on an IMAX sized screen for the first time and just loving the fact that a genre that you never expected to see in American theater done perfectly on the big screen. I mean, rocket punch, sword, just kaiju punching. Like,
you noogies. You cannot just glance past sword. Okay, let me be clear because I want everyone to understand the perspective that the rest of us had. In the moment where Gypsy Danger had that thing where you hear Charlie Hunnam in his non-acting voice go, sword, and you see the goddamn chain sword show up out of the arm, Jamie stands, fucking gets out of his chair, arm in the air like he's riding fucking Falcor, and yells, sword, fucking sword, and the rest of us fell out. I don't think any of us knew what like, I know he knew he used the sword. I had to watch it three times before I even saw that scene. Because the first time I was laughing too hard. The second time I absolutely was still laughing about the first time. And then finally I got a chance to be like, oh yeah, cool. He used the thing to cut the thing. But yeah, fucking you have so had good. Some amazing moments with that. Between that and a complete throwaway one, we watched G.I. Joe Annihilation or whatever it is, the motorcycle turns into missiles.
Motorcycle missiles.
And Jamie fucking stands up again and goes, it's a motorcycle. What turned into missiles? And fucking lost my shit there. Christ.
Yeah,
go see a movie with Jamie is really what I'm getting at. Like,
that was
no one around you will care for any of this.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. It was magic in a bottle. It was, it's the way that type of movie needs to be experienced. Like, you need to shout at it. You need to shout at it. When something amazing happens on the screen, you need to exclaim in front of your fellows. It was glorious. And then me and Dan had a great match the next day where we drew Gypsy Danger, and I grabbed like another piece of foam core and I drew a sword on it and I ran around the stage. That's like,
in a brilliant moment. Okay, let's see. I don't even know if it'll count as number three, but I'm gonna put it in as number three for right now.
Okay.
So we did Awesome Con, and we had done Awesome Con every year, and a huge shout out to the current Awesome Con staff, who was nothing but kind to us over the years, but also a huge shout out to Ben Penrod, who gave us an opportunity from Awesome Con.
Thank you, Ben!
And traveled us around all over the place, and traveling us around, and now I think of the whole one that's my favorite, because one leads into the other.
Nice.
We got a chance on the way back from Awesome Con in Indianapolis, which was a one-time con that I wish turned into a bigger thing because the people were absolutely super kind. We're riding back in the bus, and we have quite a few Power Rangers on the bus, including David Yost, who is the Blue Ranger, and he's Billy. An incredibly nice guy. Right. So
you got to hang out with Billy?
Well, yeah, because he was sitting in the seat in front of us, and we get on the bus, and there's like two guys from like season one of Walking Dead, the lady who voiced Ash from Pokemon in the U.S. version. Voice actors are totally fine. I get it. And we were almost late getting to the airport because we were waiting on Jason Mewes of Jay and Silent Bob fame, but apparently he decided to walk to the airport or something. I don't fucking know. Anyway, whatever. I don't know. But in turn, we ended up talking to some of the people on the bus because they were like, hey, what the fuck are you guys doing here? We don't recognize you from anything.
Sure.
Who are you?
Yeah, sure.
So we explain our whole thing. They're like, oh, that sounds really fun. I'm like, thanks. I really appreciate it. I see a lot of you guys at different cons, and I'm a huge fan of all of you. I really appreciate all of the cool little memories that you've given me over the years of my childhood. They're like, oh, that's incredibly kind. And like, on the one hand, is an absolutely true statement, sure. But at the same time, some of them, frankly, I don't fucking care about. There's no way around it. Yeah. Like, a random dude who was on top of the building the first season of Walking Dead. Cool. I don't care.
Yeah,
So,
but David, Billy.
Smash cut to the next year, and the whatever we had also met the, and I don't know the actress's name. She played the Yellow Ranger. She's the African-American lady.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Okay. So I cannot remember the actor's name. I don't want to bring up Google and have all the clicking all over everything. So I apologize. I'm sure some of you are shouting the name. She was incredibly kind to me because she was also there, was joking around with us and yada, yada, yada. So we get to Awesome Con the next year, and they're doing a Power Rangers reunion. And everyone but Jesus Didn't Tap Jason David Frank is all in the lobby of the hotel that we are all staying at because we are all honored guests. And they're going to go get dinner. So we're talking like, David and the Yellow Ranger and I think Austin St. John, Red Ranger, and like the guy who played the Black Ranger in the movie, along with like the second one, not the one that was in the Shield.
Yeah. Johnny Young Bosch.
Yes. Yes. And also quick shout out to the first guy who played the Black Ranger, the African-American gentleman.
Yeah.
We did a throwaway com with him. We're standing in the elevator. Ross and I are riding up. I'm wearing the red jacket. Ross is wearing the blue jacket. He goes, what are you guys supposed to be? Ross looks at him, deadpan, and goes, color commentary. And the guy fucking just starts laughing, and he was like, nice. Well done. So he actually stuck around for the beginning of the show. Like, we got him good enough for that.
Oh, so good.
But in turn, I had like four Power Rangers that recognized, or at least two of them recognized me. So Ross meets me in the lobby. I think this is the year that Marty got married, so I don't think he was there. I'm in the lobby by myself with the rig, and I'm waiting for Ross to come over so that we can get to like the hotel room and unload everything and yada yada. So I've got like a luggage cart, and I'm just standing there like a dork with the rig and the luggage and the R-Fight shirt on because I'm a fucking tourist and whatever.
Yeah.
And we go walking by them, and I'm like, David, hey. And he was like, hey, man, what's going on? How you been? I was like, I'm good. And he's like, hope you have a great show. I was like, hey, thanks. And I just kept walking. And the rest of them just kind of followed his suit. So I look at Ross, and Ross is like, you know Power Rangers? And I was like, yeah, don't you? And he's like, no. Mind you, he was on the same bus that we were, only he didn't bother to make the connection. So I get the opportunity. I see these guys. Right, yeah, like, yeah. Come to find out, I don't know if anybody realizes this, but if you go to the gym in the morning, you're not a total lard ass. There's a good chance that people who got paid to be fit actors are in the gym at like 7:30 in the morning at conventions. So you can do crunches and curls with David Yost and he remembers your shit. Right. So when you walk by and you're not creepy with him because I never asked him for a selfie or anything else like that because it's poor etiquette that dude deserves to be paid for his work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He ends up in turn recognizing me, and I don't think he could say – you put a gun to his head. I don't think he could recognize my name.
Yeah.
But I think he'd recognize our fight,
yeah.
And at the very least, he'd be like, I know that guy. He's from the thing with the drawing, and that's good enough for me.
Oh, that's so
and
great.
And I got the big time Ross, and it was fucking rad. But to parlay that –
That's a great number three.
You know, no. Go ahead. I'm gonna hold out. I'm gonna hold on to number two for another Indianapolis one. Go
okay,
ahead.
But yeah, like I don't know.
I got to big time a friend of mine while we're at a room full of other people. By the way, quick shout out, throwaway thing to Christian, WWE fame, who hung out and talked to me in a Starbucks at Awesome Con, by the way, right after we had seen Dave Bautista walk in with a pizza.
the smallest pizza.
No. It was a full-size pizza. It was a Meat Lover's. It was a lacto.
Right, but it was Dave's size. Like, Dave is huge, and the pizza looks small on him.
Right, because I asked Christian, like, hey, what kind of pizza did he get? And he started laughing, and he was like, Meat Lover's. But we all saw him at the bar, and we acted like we didn't see him, so that he was all sad standing there with his pizza looking like an idiot. And it's like, I fucking love that they rib goddamn Drax. It's the best. And then for anyone who's familiar with wrestling fans, Ross walked up, had no idea who he was chit-chatting with me, and Tommy Dreamer walked up, and Ross and Tommy Dreamer had a conversation about how great the original 60s Star Trek was, and I had to inform Ross afterward on the way back to the con that Tommy Dreamer is a guy who got famous for rubbing a cheese grater on his face, and that is one of my favorite experiences by indoctrinating the guy who was like, yeah, Kirk's best, and I'll fight somebody for it, and Ross having to go, yeah, you're probably right, and then finding out that the dude took a cheese grater to the face, and Ross realizing he was in imminent danger if he just said, fuck you, Picard's number one.
Yeah.
Right, but that's a whole nother argument.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's hysterical.
Anyway, sorry. You're number three.
Well, I have an addendum, and this has nothing to do with Art Fight, but it has something to do with Power Rangers. So, Austin St. John, Red Ranger.
Okay.
So, he apparently did, like, a card deck or a special card with the Explosum guys, like Cyanide and Happiness, because he was signing at the booth in front of us, right across from us at San Diego Comic-Con last year. So there's the Red fucking Ranger just hanging out in front of us the entire time, and people would come up and get him to sign things and, like, you know, say it's more for time or Red Ranger power or something like that. And my brother,
you're right, yeah,
my brother. So the first time Austin St. John says, it's Morphin time, my brother yells at the top of his lungs, yeah! And after Austin St. John signs the card, he comes over to our booth and he's like, that was amazing. That was the appropriate reaction. Thank you. And invited Matt to come stream with him later to show off his Power Ranger game or whatever.
That's so rad. Like,
yeah.
Can we give a bit of quick love to all of the random celebrities who have no business being that cool?
Yeah.
None. Yeah. Don't owe us shit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go on record by saying, if you think that you go to a con and you pay for a photo that you have earned some of their time, you have not. Mm-mm. They are kind enough to gift you with friendship for a fleeting moment, and you will cherish that moment forever. Don't fucking pretend.
So right. Great.
Christian didn't need to be kind to me standing in line at Starbucks waiting for his fucking oatmeal, but because I looked him dead in the eye and I went, hey, thanks for making my childhood awesome, and then went back to what I was doing, he then stopped, realized I wasn't trying to get a photo out of him for free or anything else like that, and fucking struck up a conversation with me.
Oh, that's so cool.
Because that's a fucking rad thing for him to do, and I'll never forget that shit. To this day, I'll be like, Christian's number one, fucking fight me. Like, that's just how this works.
Well, and you, speaking of more wrestlers, you had a great interaction with Virgil that one time where we went to C2E2.
Amazing, Rich. Oh, my God. C2E2 is a great convention for wrestlers because I was walking around in the morning before everything officially like opened. It was like, I think everything opened at like 9:30. It's like 9:10 or something like that. And I'm like, hey, man, I know we're all set up. We were there with Phil Chan of the Digital Pimps. And we're like, we're all set up. Is it okay if I just take a walk around the room? And you and Phil are like, yeah, man, go enjoy yourself. So I'm just kind of wandering around, getting a lay of the land without a crowd, which is the best way to kind of figure out, like, where is everything? So I'm wandering around, and WWE superstar Virgil is just setting up. And if anybody is a wrestling fan and they know Virgil, they know that him setting up at conventions and not having a line is kind of an ongoing gag. And like at one point in the early 2000s, and I didn't have the heart to bring this up to Virgil because it was kind of a sad story, but he was at the local shopping mall at White Marsh Mall, just sitting there by the elevator signing autographs for fucking no one. I don't know how he ended up setting up a table there, but it was like his generic thing of like WWE superstar. And I think this is even before he was a Hall of Famer, Virgil. And it was like, he sure is there. And he's sitting there. And I went and I bought him a Jamba Juice because Jamba Juice was right there. And I came over and I was like, hey, Virgil, thanks for all the rad memories. I really appreciate it. And the dude was totally cool and like, offered to sign something for me, and I was like, nah, man, I'm good. You deserve to be paid for that. I don't have the cash for it, but I wanted to get you something nice. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's so great.
I had already had a good experience with Virgil because he had been genuinely a nice guy. So I'm wandering around in the morning. I see a bunch of guys. By that same con, I had met Animal of Legion of Doom fame, Booker T, and Jerry Lawler.
Nice.
This is not my only Jerry the King Lawler interaction. Shout out to Youngblood. I've had many great interactions with Lawler. He's
he told
a genuinely
us about
nice
a steakhouse
guy.
On the elevator.
Yes. While Jason David Frank acted like he wasn't fucking there, like we didn't notice him. He's way smaller than he looks.
Yeah,
anyway,
I could have taken him.
Yeah, you felt confident. You should have seen him eyeing me, and me, like the asshole I am, fucking swell it up as much as I could to be like, yeah, I can fucking wreck a Green Ranger. Yeah. I don't care about his MMA training. For a fleeting moment. Right. Before King puts me in a chokehold and I never see tomorrow, I could take the Green Ranger.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I walk up to Virgil and I'm like, hey, Virgil, is it okay if I buy a photo? I know it's early and you're still setting up. I wanted to get it before I had to get back to my table and everyone came in. Virgil's still setting up his photos at the time.
Yeah.
He stops what he's doing and he goes, yeah, man, of course. Which one are you looking for? And I get the one where he's like with all of the old WWE superstars. And he's got like Vince there or whatever it is. And he... like, I'm like, hey, could you get this one? I'd really love to see it because I also want to take it over to Animal to get him to sign it as well. He's like, oh, that's rad. Animal's a great dude. Yeah. And just starts in with the stories and tells me about him and Ted DiBiase hanging out with Arsenio Hall and a bunch of other like really sweet 80s stories. And like, could not have been a kinder guy. Should have been setting up his table. Spent 20 minutes with me. Just jawing off for like a $10 or $20 photo. Mm-hmm. Like, wasn't making money. Just genuinely wanted to talk about what was going on and that somebody showed him a bit of appreciation. Could not have been a sweeter fucking guy.
That's awesome.
And like, yeah, just such a fucking great guy. If you get the opportunity, go hang out with Virgil. He's fucking fun.
I don't
believe a goddamn story he tells, but man, is he a fun motherfucker.
That's so great.
He told some story about Ted DiBiase and him and Arsenio Hall and a bucket and some strippers and like defecating outdoors. And I don't remember all the details, but I definitely remember the bullet points and being like, there's no fucking way this is true. And if it is true, that is super fitting that Ted DiBiase became a minister.
Yeah.
So
everything
makes sense now.
Shit. I think I'm on number three. Are we on number three?
I think you already did number three, didn't you?
I don't know. I just told a story about Power Rangers.
Okay, what is number three?
I got sidetracked by Power Rangers. Okay.
this is going to be a long one, but I don't
even
care.
I don't give a fuck. It's our denouement. It's our what do you call it? Like our postmortem for our career.
That's fine. I got plenty of bourbon left. We'll see if I can even get to number one.
Yeah. So number three for me is the slew of celebrity artists that I've been able to just share a stage with, and it's. Thanks to KatsuCon, we did a RaffleCon once. We did a show in LA, and I don't ask for much, but like whenever it comes time to have a special guest on the show, I always want to go up there because like I don't give a shit if I lose. I just want to hang out with these people and draw with them and stuff like that. So, KatsuCon, the first I think it was the first celebrity that we actually got to draw with was Joe Chen.
Yes.
Who?
And this is before I was involved, by the way.
Yeah. So Joe Chen, she's known for her amazing painterly style stuff, her excellent line work. Like I've been following her stuff for ages. Found out that she's like she lives in Virginia or some shit like that. but like we got to do. She was a special guest at KatsuCon 1 year, and I just went up to her and asked her if she would want to do art fight with us, and she was like, "Yeah, I guess so. Okay, what is this?" And she came. She came, watched a couple of the rounds, and then we were going up, and she was like, "Oh, this is like Pico Chat or like G Chat, because there used to be like a drawing program that." Web based, and you could sketch with people and stuff like that. She kicked she kicked the shit out of me. Like she drew the scariest fucking clown I've ever. Like we were talking about Aaron drawing scary clown. This clown was terrifying. Like this is the stuff of nightmare clowns, and it was great. And she was we were still using markers at the time, but I was using a brush, and she was like, "Oh, can I use a brush too?" Because she's like old school.
Yeah. Right.
So, and it was so amazing. Like I wish I could have kept that piece and like hung it up in the wall. Cause like that piece looked phenomenal. The year after that, Frank Cho was the guest.
Yes.
So I got to draw with Frank Cho. We had to tell him not to draw boobs on stage, because of course we did. But he's another local artist that I had been following for a long time. He went to the University of Maryland. I went to the University of Maryland. He had a strip in the Diamondback, which was the college paper. And so I've been following his stuff forever. And I was like, I get to hang out with fucking Frank Cho. I gave him a puppy cow. He was like, what the fuck is this? And then one of my favorite guests that we got to work with during this whole KatsuCon run that we had was Stan motherfucking Sakai.
Who could not have been a sweeter fucking man.
He's so amazing.
Genuinely, like we've met a lot of really genuinely sweet people. Stan is the most gentle, loving, caring guy to absolute strangers. Like just...
yeah.
Had no reason to trust us.
No.
And we're just like, hey, Stan, we do this thing. It'd be a hell of a lot of fun if you'd want to join us. And like a caring grandpa, he's like, sure, kids, let's go do the thing. And we're like, we're going to get Stan Sakai to do the thing. It's going to be great. It was like, amazing. I remember when the rest of the crew came back, we were like, hey, so we need to switch the card around because Stan Sakai is going to fight Jamie. Okay, cool. And we're like, I don't remember who got kicked off that show, but I swear to God, I think we kicked someone off of that show.
Yeah.
To have you fight Stan.
It was so good. He drew like this dinosaur with like Uzis and shit. It was amazing.
Right. Well, I think if memory serves, it was like, I think it was a spoof on Cowboys and Aliens, that movie that came out with, I think, Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Where it was like Cowboys and Dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So he draws this like big fat T-Rex with like a little tiny vest and like an itty bitty cowboy hat and then fucking Uzis. And the next thing you know, the bullets start flying your direction and the crowd fucking lost it because it took him a second to figure out what was going on. And then you attacked his art and he was like, oh, and then immediately fucking went after you. Like, oh, this makes sense. Now I understand what we're doing. We're fucking with each other.
Yeah.
And he was totally game.
Yeah.
And watching you become a goddamn child in a moment, like you literally were like, senpai's noticing me, it's the best fucking thing. It was amazing. Ever. I swear to God,
because I remember like very gingerly sneaking over to his thing and like being the most nervous to draw anything. Because it's Dan motherfucking Usagi Yojimbo Sakai.
Right, yeah, because I think you were waiting for him to fucking backhand you for touching his art.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, rightfully so. Like, had he come down full fucking pimp on you and been like, no, no, this is mine. You can touch it when I'm fucking done. It's like.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Lay the stand hand down.
That was amazing. Two other celebrities that we got to draw with. Raffle Con, there was a convention up at MIT. It was like a nerd genre con and had a whole bunch of stuff. Tak Toyoshima. I don't know if everyone knows that name, but he does a comic called Secret Asian Man. And I had followed his stuff for a long time. Well, he was a guest at the show, and I was like, hey, Tak, you wanna draw with me on stage? And he was like, yeah, sure, I used to do graffiti. And it was an amazing time. Like, we had the best time,
rad.
Going back and forth. I did a Clippy joke because the inventor of Clippy was in the audience.
Right.
And I think it was like, it looks like you're trying to do an art fight. Would you like help with that? And I drew Clippy, and everyone was like, oh my God, Clippy.
Right. Because internet fans and fish in a barrel, right?
Yeah. And then the last celebrity artist that we worked with was the guy who draws Axe Cop.
I forgot his name. Jesus Christ. Hang on. Keep going, because I am actually going to look this up, and now I feel bad. I'm going to look up the other ones, too. Go ahead. Keep going. Tell your story.
But we managed to do an art to book a show at Nerd Melt when they had a stage space out in L.A., We flew out there, and the guy from Axe Cop agreed to be on the show with us, along with Leah Hernandez. And so we had, you know, I got to partner up with Leah for like a tag bout later. But like, the Axe Cop guy was great. Like, he was drawing crazy shit. And you know, all of the celebrity artists that we've managed to book on the show have been like the sweetest, most generous people we've worked with. And
are we talking about Ethan Nicole?
That's who it was. Yeah.
Yep.
And it's only taken them like maybe 2 or 3 seconds to get what the hell we're doing and just run roughshod all over the canvas and do the damn thing. And it's always been one of my highlights, you know, getting to meet these people and to break canvas with them, so to speak.
That makes sense. For the record, Aisha Campbell is the Yellow Ranger that I got a chance to hang out with. Nice. He was super cool. Yeah. By the way, honorable mention, because I can't believe you didn't cover them, and I feel like I'd be remiss if we didn't. Caldwell Tanner of College Humor fame has been a longtime friend and has done some amazing art fights.
Yeah.
And fucking Noel Stevenson of goddamn everything.
No shit.
Fucking She-Ra is fucking up there jaw jacking and partying down with you and fucking Baron Von Sexifel.
Yeah.
And he's a total class act, I might add.
Actually,
such a great lady.
Caldwell had one of my favorite costumes. He came out as M. Bison.
Yes.
With like the hat and the uniform with his sleeves out. And then he had a pair of nunchuck markers, and he was just flipping them around.
Fucking great. God damn. That whole College Humor show that we did in Brooklyn, where they brought the rest of the College Humor artists out there, and one dude who had no business being an artist, being that fucking tall and fit, came out like fucking Conan the Barbarian, calling himself Drawnan.
Drawnan.
And fucking shows up with a goddamn broadsword in the middle of fucking Brooklyn.
It was
which,
so good.
How the fuck he wandered into a bar with that without anyone saying a goddamn thing. Like,
yeah. They anyway. Were great to work with.
Yes. A lot of love to them. Man. Even though fucking Caldwell broke the rig. Son of a bitch. Still bitter. I'm not going to fucking pretend. I'm still bitter. I don't have to be involved anymore.
All right. Number two, Brandon.
Number two, the drunkest I have ever been with Art Fight. We went to that Indianapolis Awesome Con. We get done the show on Saturday. We get invited by Lee Trollis, who does Little Guardians, if memory serves. Super sweet guy, great artist, fun comic, and his wife, whose name escapes me, and I'm a monster for being that way, and a bunch of other comic artists that are there who had no idea who we were. We all go out to this like steakhouse that's like right down the street from the convention center, the way Indianapolis is set up. There's like the convention center, a mall, everything's put together, and everything has like walkways because they get a ton of snow, so you don't have to go outside anywhere. So we decide to venture outside and go to a steakhouse to go have dinner with everybody. So we're having beverages through the night. It's Marty Day's birthday. But of course, Marty's not drinking. But fucking hell if Ross, myself, and Michael Bracco are fucking pouring it on. So we're drinking through everything. This is my first experience enjoying old fashions. So bourbon and everything else that goes into an old fashioned. So I'm having a great time. Mikey's ordering drinks for me. I'm having a blasty. And I'm like, I don't have to drive. We don't have to worry about anything. We're walking back to the hotel. I'm totally cool. This is great. This is one of the few times I get to let loose and have a great time in a city I will maybe never be in again. So who cares what happens so long as I don't get arrested? We get back to the bar after dinner. Same restaurant, but just shuffle our way over to the bar. We pony up there and come to find out this is a place very similar, if anyone's familiar in the like DMV area, of Dewclaw. They do their own brewing.
Okay.
So they had their own kind of beer. So they did a chocolate peanut butter stout. What that really means for everybody playing at home is it was a dark, thick beer that tasted like chocolate and peanut butter. So when you added Bailey's Irish Cream to it and did a car bomb, it became a very tasty chocolate peanut butter milkshake that was boozy as hell.
Oh, my God.
So Mikey and I had maybe had – speaking of beverages, good for you.
Spreckers.
Nice. So Mikey and I had probably had, I don't know, 4 or 5 old fashions. We're having a good time. And I know this because Mikey, unlike myself, does not power drink in like a fun crowd. Like I drink like a 22-year-old on spring break. Like it's either really fruity or I will fucking pour it on and I view it as a challenge. So we get to the bar and I'm like, Mikey, let's do a shot. And he was like, okay. And then notices the beer on tap and goes, hey, can we do Irish car bombs with that? Lady's like, yeah, sure. Next thing you know, Mikey and I are 4 car bombs in each and ordering more old fashions. So we are each probably the better part of 9 to 10 drinks in. And we're talking about in the time of dinner and maybe an hour afterwards. So probably 9 drinks in 2.5 hours. We are having a good time. And we are a handful at this point. We go walking outside. Ross is drinking. By the way, there was an entire bridal party that came in post their wedding. We bought all of them a round of shots of tequila. So I ended up having tequila shots. Mikey did not, to his credit. He was like, I'll die. So I'm like, I'll drink his. So fucking like tequila shots around and I'm buying around for everybody. They just got married. Fuck it. Like some random fat guy just bought everybody around. So I hope that at some point along the way, they're going to be like, remember the wedding when we went to that weird bar and then that fat guy bought us all around? That dude's a good dude. I hope that's how I get referred to. It's really all
awesome.
Right. So we go and leave. Ross beats us outside. He's like, I'm warm. I'm going to go outside. So now it's myself, Ross. Myself, Baron von Saxophone, Michael Bracco, Marty Day, I think, Alex Kazanis, Two Drink Alex, and El Russo Rojo are hanging out outside of the bar, and no one is drunker than Mikey and I, like except for maybe Ross, who apparently decided to go in search of bread. He saw the shining light of a Jimmy John's in the distance and went, they've got bread.
Jimmy James.
Disappears. We're texting Ross. We're calling Ross. We're downtown Indianapolis. We have no idea where we realistically are.
Where the fuck are you?
At a certain point, We got three drinks in, and I leaned into Marty, and I'm like, here is my wallet. Please make sure we make it back to the hotel. I'll be dead without you. And happy birthday. Like, it was like, things are going to take a turn. I know we're in trouble. So we're waiting on the street. Ross comes back like the proudest of dads, two loaves of bread in hand, right? We're like, Ross, why didn't you answer your phone? And he looks at us and goes, I got bread in each hand. And like, without hesitating, that fucking bites the top of a loaf off because he's got day-old Jimmy John's bread. We go to – we have had dinner maybe an hour and a half ago, but a lot of us are drunk, and Marty's like, yeah, I guess we should head back to the hotel. And I'm like, fuck that, dude. Let's go do something fun. And he was like, well, I haven't had dessert, and there's a Steak and Shake across the street. And I was like, we're getting milkshakes. Let's rock and roll. So we go next door. We manage to get seated somehow. I don't think Mikey and I were allowed to talk. It's just kind of a hard rule. We get seated. Everyone's having a good time. We're ordering food to try and sober up a little bit. We got to make it our way back. A bunch of kids are there from a local college, or at least I think a local college. It might have been like an event that was happening in the other part of the convention center, because they're all wearing like matching band college shirts, like University of Yada Yada marching band. And they're all clearly like together, all getting like carry out orders and what have you. Ross, in all of his glory, goes, I got to find out what's up with this. Stands up, saunters his way over to a young lady, leans up to her within earshot of the rest of us, and goes, so you guys go to school? I have never seen a human want to jump out of their own skin, but watching her kind of lean back, and like, I don't even think at a certain point it was even Ross's fault that he was being creepy. I think he was just he had no other mode available. Like,
God damn it.
His default was creepy dad, like, at that point.
God damn it, and, Ross.
Right, I know.
Fucking.
So she leans back and she's like, yeah. And he's like, good for you. And then there's this long pause, and then he just comes back down and sits. And we fucking fell out. Like, could not handle it. Fell out. Jesus Christ. Okay, quick, because I don't think it's my number one, but I haven't figured it out. On the way to that Comic-Con, we were in Chicago O'Hare Airport waiting for our flight. There were delays. We sit down in a little horseshoe area. Come to find out the flight to Indianapolis from Chicago is a puddle jumper. Like, I don't know, 30 people on the plane or something like that, little tiny one. Dude sitting in the little horseshoe. He's got Louis Vuitton baggage. I'm like, that guy looks like Mike Epps from Friday and a bunch of other things. I'm like, that has to be Mike Epps. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So like, I'm leaning into Marty, and like, we're getting like little sandwiches from the little bistro thing. It's like right next to it. And I'm like, I think that's fucking Mike Epps. And he's like, I think it is too, but I'm not about to ask a random black dude if he's Mike Epps, cause I'm going to be that guy. And I was like, fuck it, I'll do it. So we go, we sit down, I sit down next to him, and like, I'm kind of like getting myself settled in or whatever it is. And he's just cool, just sitting on his phone, just kind of scrolling through. And I was like, excuse me. And he was like, yeah, man, what's up? I was like, at the risk of being that white guy, are you Mike Epps? And he leans into me and he kind of has first. He goes, what if I tell you no? And I was like, I think you get to punch me in the face. And he just starts laughing. He's like, yeah, I'm Mike Epps. I was like, I fucking knew it. So dude was totally cool.
That's awesome.
Fucking Mikey sits down. Has no idea who he is. Apparently has never seen Friday. I'm talking with Mike, just kind of like chit-chatting, asking him what he's going, you know, what he's in town for. Apparently his mom lives there. He grew up in Indianapolis. Oh, and he's cool. Just going home.
Yeah.
Like, just random throwaway conversation. Mikey, without missing a beat, goes, so you're going to the con too? What do you do? You an artist? And Mike literally looks at me like, who the fuck is this guy? I'm so sorry,
Mr. Epps.
Right.
He doesn't know any better.
Would it feel better if like I put some powder on my hand and put the hand on him? I don't know what's policy for you right now. Like, it just, I feel white enough for the both of us. I don't even know how he feels.
I'm sorry, Mr. Epps. No, he doesn't know what day it is. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, so for years, that's why we called Super Art Fight Super Fan Mike Epps. Could could not have been kinder. And I got to watch him fuck with the modern day equivalent of the Howls from Gilligan's Island in the airport, because they didn't know what he was from. And he kept telling them there was a commercial where he was the burglar, and he kept breaking into white people's houses just to see their fucking face. He's like, I'm telling you, I was on the Super Bowl commercial. Remember the one where there was like an old white couple looked just like you, and they were like huddled up at home, and then there was a dude looking a lot like me, only like he had a mask, but like I knew he looked like me, and he smashed the window, and he ran inside, and he just pistol whipped one of y'all, and just like I'm watching him talk through their worst case scenario of their interaction with an African American guy, and he is in his fucking element torturing them, and I am doing everything I can to not fucking cackle like a child, because I want to see how uncomfortable he can make these people, because he clearly is a man of means. He has Louis Vuitton luggage, like legit Louis Vuitton, like 3 or 4 bags worth of luggage.
Oh yeah.
So they know he is of means, but they don't know what to do with what's happening right now. The greatest thing, I swear to God.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. So to this day, Mike Epps, shout out. I fucking love you. You're an absolute hero.
Golden. Gorgeous.
Amazing. Golden.
Oh my God.
Anyway, number one with a bullet, Jamie.
Well, we're on two. I think we're on two. Oh. I'm on two.
Okay, yeah, two for you then.
Two. So I forget which Awesome Con it was, but it was when we were still in one of the side rooms. And okay. I think it was like one of the first shows that, like, after Idol that Chris Scott was on.
Okay.
Or General Storm Sketch.
General Storm Sketch, yes.
And me and him were going up against each other. And before the match, Chris, much like myself, is a lover of Japanese karate bug men.
Is this when you tortured Marty and I?
Oh yes, oh yes. It was great.
I fucking love this.
So I told Aniki, Chris, and I said, look, no one's gonna know what we're drawing, but I don't give a fuck. Let's just do everything tokusatsu. Let's turn every topic on the wheel into a Kamen Rider or a Super Sentai or a Kaiju. Let's just lean way the fuck in. And he was like, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. So I don't even remember what our first topic was, but we started drawing like Kamen Riders, and you guys were on commentary being like, I think that's a kaiju. And then we would just grab the microphone and be like, well, actually it's Moon from the Kamen Rider.
You shithead nerded the both of us the entire time. And I think the topic was like something super generic. It was like heroes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And like, I knew I was in trouble when you stole the microphone from Marty the first time and you were like, actually, it's my close personal hero, and then rattled off some name from some tokusatsu from some year I don't even know. And I immediately saw Chris smirk and I was like, fuck, I'm about to run the gauntlet. And like always, the second I know I'm being fucked with, I suddenly am going to dig in. So like where Marty may get nervous, yeah. I'm like, oh, is this how this is going to be? No problem. All right, we're good. I know how to deal with, like, I can deal with abusive. Like, mm-hmm. I'm good with that. Kind, I don't know what to do with. Right, I'm like, thank you. That's right. I appreciate that. Somebody's like, hey, fuck you. I'm like, hey, nice shoes, dickhole. Like, I'm good.
yeah so that remains one of my favorite matches, because we got the fanboy so hard on the canvas. And the best part was, there was a kid in the audience after the show holds up her cell phone and it's like, oh my God, it's a real thing. It's a real thing, because the entire time she was looking up Kamen Rider and all this stuff that we were trying.
Of course you guys are right. Yeah. that's part of the fun credibility thing of the way I'm selling it. Is it real? Is it not real? I have no fucking clue. Like, to this day, you guys throw out animes and I'm like, there's no fucking way that's real. And then I'll Google it and of course it's fucking real. So, like, to this day, I still have no idea if Assassination Classroom is a thing. I have no clue.
I think it is.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Even you don't know.
I don't know.
Right. It seems very, very ill-fated, like, at the very least. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great moment. It's a short moment, but it was hysterical. I loved it.
That was so much fun.
Fucking loved it. Yeah. All right, Brandon. What is your number one out of order? Completely out of order.
Jesus. God. Number one. Number one. Number one. Number one.
It's hard to think of these.
Yeah, like I'm thinking of like when we did Mag Classic, and that's where Olivia Oblivia was born, where Red Aaron became an old lady, and it was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the only art fight that I was in, that you forced me into, that I won.
Yes, that, felt that was total, great.
That felt like total cheating, though.
Fuck it.
No, win. I don't care. I'll take the win.
Yeah.
Like I said on stage, I'm the only undefeated art fighter. I'm going to live by that fucking, like,
yeah.
That is mine.
You win how you win, man.
You know, I need to update my Instagram profile of art fight record 1-0.
Undefeated, bitches.
Yeah, undefeated. Let me think. So I think the realistic one has to be kind of a combination of a couple, and it's going to be a cheap cop out answer, and I'm sorry.
Sure.
The Idol Kids.
Yeah.
Like, for anyone who doesn't realize how Idol has worked in the past, so in previous years, other than the Idol show itself, in previous years, Nick DeFabio, Jamie, and Mikey were the ones who were kind of the panel. When Nick stepped aside, Kelsey Wales, Stompadon, or Dr. Professor Hemoglobin, MDLMNOP, jumped in.
I love that name.
It's so fucking nailed it every time. She stepped in at the most recent Art Fight Idol. But the idea is that for most of the time in Art Fight Idol, it is the core management crew picking the roster based off of submissions. You know, they submit a profile, they submit a character idea, we debate it, we figure out what's good, what's not so great, we pick the cream of the crop, and then we say, hey, congratulations, you're in, and then you guys hand it off to myself, Charm City, Shinobi, Dan Malahome, and Red Aaron, and then you take your hands off of it. Mm-hmm. And then you don't touch them until day of the show. So you get to see them kind of come along. So I get to have these great moments where Red Aaron would open her home, have all of us come into her home, set up the rig in her basement, and we would do art fights where I would do intros and I would test to see their intro capability. And then I would do commentary with Aaron or Dan or Shoujo Agogo or any of the others who were willing to come up and hang out at Aaron's for the day and basically give these people a realistic idea of, like, what's an art fight like? What am I going to give you shit about? What doesn't work? What does? So, like, the Valkyrie, that all stemmed from an Idol meeting where she didn't necessarily know what she wanted to do. I sent her back behind the canvas to do her intro at least a half dozen times.
Yeah.
And by the time she got to the last one, she walked out angry. I was like, what are you supposed to be? She slapped the marker out of my hand that was supposed to be a microphone, just straight pushes me in the chest, just flexes at me, looks at the roster, grabs a marker, drops it in front of him like she's dropping a mic, slams her hand on the canvas twice, and then just goes and points at the Wheel of Death to start the timer.
Oh, that's amazing.
I hadn't
even
introduced anyone else. Uh-huh. But she was so angry with me because I'd sent her behind the canvas, and I was like, no, I want more anger, I want more energy, just over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Moments like that, moments like General Storm Sketch, moments like the Corrugator, moments like Two Drink Alex – I got a chance to take these people who didn't know me from anyone else, and because of having my name associated with this dumb fuck thing, they took my word as gospel. They took every bit of knowledge I could imbibe in them. They took every hint, everything they could, and they poured it out there. And we got to see Two Drink Alex back when he was the Doodler in his first match.
Yeah.
Trounce Baron Von Sexival, not only in the match, but also in the entrance, which no one does. Like, he did the full Big Lebowski bowling bit. He had goddamn dancers with full pin things and everything. Like, seeing those kids pour their hearts out up there, and then – and I don't care if it sounds selfish. Every one of them did the same exact thing. they had this moment where they come out, they do their intro or they do their match and they get done. And every one of them at some point along the way gives me this like kind of half cocked back, completely out of character look of like, how'd I do? And like every time I'm like fucking beaming. I'm like, I am so fucking proud of you. Because I'm watching these people like goddamn Wisteria, Nicole Roberts.
Yeah.
She had so much nervous energy the first time. She's fucking tag champ now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the fact that I got to be part of that, that I got to encourage people, that's a fucking 20 for me. Like, I to this day, will hold around the banner of being called Art Dad till the day I die. I don't care if no one else 20 years from now gives a fuck. At some point along the way, I'm pretty sure if I'm still talking to Alex Kazanis, he will still call me Art Dad. And same thing with Chris Scott. And that sort of thing means the world to me. So if it's a cheap cop-out answer, I don't really care. It's That's number fine. One with a bullet, and I don't mind ranking it as number one because I fucking love kids.
It's a good one. I mean, like, working with the new people coming up, it's awesome. It's going to be weird, like, not interacting with the new class
that comes in. To be completely transparent, it was part of why we had this moment where I was like, I need to make a decision of whether or not I'm going to retire now, because I would hate to nurture and tutor these new roster of Art Fight Idols and then decide 2 months later that, like, I'm leaving, because it's not fair to them. Yeah. Like, they need to have that roster, and now I feel comfortable enough that they have Red Aaron and the Charm City Shinobi and Wisteria and Shoujo Agogo and General Storm Sketch and basically, hell, everybody but Baron Von Sexyvill. What do we have? Baron Von Sexyvill, Brawling Jamie Baldwin, Stompadon, Dr. Frizzer, Hemoglobin. And that's about it. I think everyone else is almost an idol kid.
Yeah.
And Old Man Prendeville. Like, everybody else is an idol kid. I know that they are going to take care of the next generation. So when I took my hands off the wheel, I know that the rest of them are going to, like, at some point along the way, the speech that I gave all of them, which is, welcome to Super Art Fight. This is going to be dumb. You're going to hate it sometimes. It's going to be rad. You're going to get obsessed over it. And you are welcome as long as you want to be here. If you decide that you want to go, that is totally fine. We all love you. We all respect you.
Yeah.
But if you want to be here and you want to do the thing, there is a home for you. There's a stage for you. There is an outlet for you. Just give it your all and don't hold back.
Yeah.
And being able to know that the rest of them will give them some sort of similar speech and will say it with conviction and will give them all the love and support that I know they're capable of giving, that's fucking great to me.
Yeah. Like,
I love that so much.
Yeah.
All right. Number one with a bullet for you, Jamie.
So I think there, for me, it goes back to like the beginning, like me and Nick. There have been like a lot of like golden moments with me and Nick just doing this dumb fucking thing. Like, you know, coming up with the idea during Katsucon 1 year or during like Art Fight or Iron Artist. Where like we got off stage and we were like, maybe we could do this in a club show, or like one of the early Magfests when they were at the other hotel. Like, me and Nick were doing a mural, a Street Fighter mural, and DJ Asu was like playing shitty music.
Somewhere along the way, somebody who knows us is a little fucking annoyed at calling his music shitty. I'm sorry, it is. Like, he's a hell of a nice guy.
Nice dude, but like, he skipped beats, man. If you're a DJ, you can't. Motherfucker. Anyway, like, we're sitting there, me and Nick are doing this thing, and the Red Bull girls are wandering around. One of them goes up to Nick and says, "Do you want a Red Bull? You look like a man who could use a case." Goes out to our car, brings Nick a case of fucking Red Bull, and not just like a 12-pack, like the big Gunga Din motherfucker, and just hands it to Nick. And it was like, okay, now we're powered by Red Bull. We did another mural show at the Metro Gallery Duff, you remember Duff of Cake Boss?
Yes, yes. Charm City Cakes.
Charm City Cakes.
Duff. Geez, Goldman. I keep thinking McKagan, but that's Guns N' Roses. Yeah. Duff Goldman of Charm City Cakes fame, who is a nice guy, but his band's not nearly as good as it's cracked up to be. And I paid $12 for a fucking LP in like 2008, and it had three songs on it. You fucking owe me money, you rich bitch. Anyway,
but we were doing a mural at their Duff, his band was playing or something like that.
Yes.
And he came in, gives us a stink eye, goes off and plays a set, comes back, sees what we're doing. He goes up to Nick and he says, like, when I came in here, I thought it looked like shit. I didn't know what you guys were here for. But like, man, this is looking really good. Nick turns to him dead in the eyes and say, it's all about the journey, man.
Fucking Nick at his most Nick. I absolutely loved anytime he got like real wistful and like fucking Mr. Miyagi with that shit, like just throw away one-liners, like, it's all about the journey, bro.
It's all about the journey. It's all about the
journey. Just no hesitation with that guy. Just like, I'm not going to big time you. I'm not going to call you an asshole. I'm just going to basically give you an answer that all you can basically respond with is, thanks.
But he was the one who first did like costumes on the show. Like,
yeah,
at Katsucon, he did RoboCop. He came out as RoboCop.
That wasn't Katsucon. That was an Autobar.
Oh, it was an Autobar.
Because I remember being at Nick's house helping him build the whole thing. And that's the first time I saw him with the helmet on doing the robot as RoboCop. And it fucking blew my mind.
God, it was amazing.
Damn, the fucking costume, the corpse paint.
Yeah.
I bought a million candle watt spotlight. We dropped the lights. He came out, I think, to kick Jamie Baldwin's ass during a main event for the title.
Yeah. Yeah.
Came out with fucking like full on like Norwegian black metal corpse paint. And so I just fucking hit the spotlight and he hit the face so fucking hard. God damn. Yeah. You know, actually, that was my first art fight, was when he dressed up like the Joker from 89 Batman
and did
the Party Man entrance where we put Nick's face on dollar bills and
money, money, money.
Right. Yeah. And we're blasting Party Man and me and former referee Mike George are throwing dollar bills into the crowd at the time.
Yeah. They're just so many good Nick moments.
Oh, God.
I miss working with him. And
yes,
you know, I wish hopefully.
Yeah, but he's fucking killing it with his own shit though.
That's true.
Like, I'm missing him on stage, but I'm super happy to see that guy find a niche, make a great living, be able to have a bunch of fans who really appreciate him and him to find his stride and be able to keep riding that.
Yeah.
I hope that continues in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Because the dude deserves it. Like, he's put in his work. I remember him grinding for years. I'm very happy to see him doing well.
It's impressed me how far he's taking his career. And it's always been like, I've always loved working with Nick. Whenever he has time to do like a mural thing, like if it's for P-Lander or if it's just for a stream or whatever, we always have a good time.
I was going to say, hanging out and doing a stream with the two of you, just making art all day.
Yeah. The weird Dick Vagicorn thing.
Yeah. The weird Dick Vagicorn thing and the gigantic like party mural van and all sorts of silly shit.
Yeah.
And getting YouTube notifications about breaking music violations. Got like 120 YouTube notifications. So fucking mad.
Jealous motherfuckers.
That's all right.
I mean, if you want a highlight reel, that's a highlight reel like a motherfucker.
Yeah. And that's our own personal experiences. I'm sure we're forgetting a ton of shit. But I think the kind of – to bring it back – I guarantee you, if you go to every art fighter, they've got stories, and some of them are crossing over, and I'm sure Marty has his own. Uh-huh. There are a ton of other stories. There's still, and I'm going to throw this out there in very vague terms because I still haven't used it yet. There is a photo of Ross Nova that I can only describe as a gift.
It's majestic. And majestic.
The gentleman's agreement that we have is I can only use it once. And I have yet to use it. And I don't know if I voided warranty by retiring, but as far as I'm concerned, he made that agreement with me because it lives on my phone.
I'm surprised we didn't use it on Friday.
I seriously debated it, but I was really concerned he was going to be genuinely upset. I have threatened to put it up on a billboard as promotions for a show. I have threatened to the ongoing one right now is that I was going to have it printed and framed in gold as a wedding present. Oh, so nice. This way he had to awkwardly put it in his basement and never use it. But every so often his wife would have to walk by and do the laundry and see that photo framed in gold, like just fucking huge, like 3 feet by 4 feet, just bigger than hell, just framed up. But yeah, at some point along the way, I'm going to use it. I'm terrified to say, and I don't know if he'll ever notice or he'll watch this, but I might just give it to the roster as the last thing I do.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And just let them do with it what they like.
That's a genuine gift.
That's a genuine gift. Like, just kind of hand it to those I care about and let them do with it what they please.
All right, Brandon. Well, I have to use the bathroom really badly. So yeah, I think
we're done.
We should sign ironically. Off here. Where can people find you?
They can find me now on Instagram at that guy Chalmers. If you're an Art Fight fan, you want to keep up with me, you're like, hey, I don't really do the Instagram. Friend me on Facebook. I'll take any and all friendships. I can't promise I'll follow you back, but I'll at least friend you. And you know, I apologize for anything I say that would upset you, but you know, I am who I am. Yeah. But I appreciate all of the years of love and support. I hope that doesn't stop. I look forward to see what Art Fight is doing next.
Yeah, definitely.
But in all genuine nature, thanks for the love over the years. You guys are the fucking best.
Yeah.
Jamie, where can they find you?
Jamie Noguchi on Instagram, Angry Zen Master on Twitter. Just put my name and stuff. You'll find me. You're here on the podcast, yep. So you yep. got me. It's been a wild ride. It's been 11 years. It's been a great time. And I wish them the best. And I look forward to seeing what crazy shit shows up in my feed because we're still following them and all that kind of stuff. So
hell yeah.
Cheers and cheers, see you on the flop.
Later.